It's the Red Tag Sales Event at Jeff Weiler Chevrolet of Columbus. Look for the red tags and unlock unbeatable discounts on new and pre-owned Chevys. 0% APR on select new Chevrolet for well-qualified buyers. From the rugged Silverado to the sleek Malibu, every tag means savings. Financing made easy. We'll pay off your trade no matter what you owe. Stop by Jeff Weiler Chevrolet on Gender Road or shop anytime at jeffweilercolumbus.com. That's jeffweilercolumbus.com.
Welcome to Dark Mode, the podcast that brings you sage advice from two technology experts. And that's not just what we call ourselves. It's what our moms tell people when the display is pro. XDR. I'm your host, Luke Miani.
And I'm your host, Noah Rubin. On this show, we take questions from listeners, attempt to answer them to varying degrees of success, and maybe even have a laugh or two along the way.
And for our first topic on tonight's episode of The Inevitability of White Male Friendship, comma, a podcast, we are discussing Apple's displays. Now, as you guys may have seen on the channel, but a few days ago, I uploaded a video on the 30-inch Apple Cinema display from 2004. I've actually got it right next to me here. It is looking beautiful and fresh, even though you can't see it. And if you're listening to this, then you can't see anything, because that's how audio works. But my goodness, no, I don't know if you've seen any of the details on this thing. Isn't it amazing?
I know that thing is, we've talked about it a little bit. I know it's pretty old. It's, what was it, like 18 years mm-hmm. old? Is that right?
Yep, 2004.
And that was 18 years ago.
Yeah, no, that alone is kind of freaky.
Weird. But yeah, that's and I know it looks cool. And was this the one that had that like special display port thing to have so much bandwidth at the time?
So it's not actually display port. This predates most digital video standards. It uses dual link DVI.
That's what I meant. But it's the thing where they had two of them. They had to invent that special technology, right?
I'm not actually sure if Apple invented dual link DVI, but they certainly pioneered it because mm-hmm. it wasn't really a thing beforehand. Because a normal DVI signal can't push 2560 by 1600 resolution. It's actually the same resolution as an M1 MacBook Air or MacBook Pro. So it's one that Apple's familiar with, but obviously it's much larger. Pixel density, right? It's not Retina. You wouldn't exactly expect that for 2004. But given that it's 18 years old, 2560 by 1600, 100 PPI, the color accuracy is excellent. Even the brightness and contrast levels are very good. The viewing angles are surprisingly good. Every display that I ever used from before 2010 had like 6 degrees of angle where everything looked okay. Yeah. And then you know how a lot of like those older PC laptops, even if you were looking on it completely straight on, the pixels and the color at the top of the or the bottom of the display were already starting to shift. Like mm-hmm. the viewing angles were so bad that you couldn't even view the whole display because the angles were so narrow.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, you'd turn the computer just a little bit and the like pixel they would like invert or like shift or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, and so this thing does not have that, which I guess is why it costs $5,000 in today's money, but it does come with the stand.
That's good.
So that's a nice touch.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, it's a gorgeous display. You can pick them up for $200, which is pretty crazy. The most difficult part is just adapting it to work with USB-C. But fortunately, there is an adapter. You just plug it on in, and it works great. It looks amazing. It has capacitive brightness. That's the thing. Every like third-party monitor I've ever used has some weird little nubbin on the back, and you have to go into some really ugly menu to adjust the brightness. This just has a little button on the side. Boop, boop. Easy.
Yeah, that's
and in fact, nice. Even on laptops, certain laptops, some of the things I plugged it into, the brightness button on the Mac adjusted the screen on devices 18 years apart.
Because most monitors, I feel like, don't do that, right?
I think the ultra-fine ones probably do.
Those do.
Because they're using Apple panels.
Those do, but I feel like most, like, general monitors you plug into, you know, you can't do that.
Yeah. And in fact, while we're on the subject of Apple monitors, this at the moment, this 30-inch cinema display is kind of a stand-in for me because I really want a Pro Display XDR. Or specifically, I want a new one. But at this point, I'm kind of addicted to a big old screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's, first of all, I think it's kind of interesting because when you said, you know, that the cinema display was $5,000 in today's money, that's, you know, about where the Pro Display XDR is. Obviously, you know, you have to buy the stand with that as well. But, like, I don't know, it's just kind of funny to You basically can compare them at that point. You know, you're looking at, they're both just like pro displays. They're both at the same price point. So it's kind of interesting to compare them and, you know, see how far we've come, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about going from 2560 by 1600 up to 6K resolution, talking about local dimming zones, there's a lot of difference. But one thing that is a little weird to me is that the Pro Display XDR, unlike this 30-inch cinema display, is kind of alone. Like, when this thing came out, it was the high end of Apple's monitor range, but they did also offer the same enclosure, the same basic feature set in 23 and 20-inch sizes. And it's kind of weird that Apple essentially exited the monitor business. Like, even since this, like, this was the peak, right? They had the 23, they had the 20, they had the 20-inch, which was 1680 by 1050. They had the 23 at 1080p, and then they had the 30-inch at 2560 by 1600. That was the peak. They never had a better lineup relative to the time than that, because after that they went to the Thunderbolt cinema display, and that was the same panel in an iMac, but just on its own. But they didn't have, like, different versions. They didn't update it. They didn't make a Retina version. Then they had the LG ultrafine displays, which were kind of a cop-out because it was the same panel that the iMacs used, but it wasn't Apple, and it didn't have, like, the aesthetic and the usability, the little features that you would want from an Apple display. I want that back.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense for Apple to go back into the display market because, like, first of all, they were there, and then you can look at, like, you know, LG, obviously they partnered with them, but, like, they have the Pro Display XDR. And I feel like, you know, Apple, they get all these panels. Like, you look at the MacBook Pro panel, obviously, you know, it's small, but, like, they put a lot of, like, new features in that. The ProMotion, the, you know, mini LED, like, all that stuff. Like, there's some really compelling tech in there. And I feel like if they could just get a bigger version of that, you know, slap it in a box, like, it makes a lot of sense.
And, I mean, it's... the thing is, they don't even have to be that, like, creative. All they have to do is take the panels that they're already using in iMacs and put them in a new housing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, for the longest time, the cinema displays shared panels with iMacs. The Thunderbolt one, same thing. The Ultrafine, all of those things are iMac displays. And I think I actually had a poll about this, or I talked about this in a video. Like, if Apple were to do this again, I think you'd get a really interesting choice, because you could essentially say, okay, I'm going to get my M1 Max in an iMac form factor, 27-inch, ProMotion, 5K, all that jazz, right? And you could get your M1 Max that way. Or you could buy the display, the same panel, and hook it up to an M1 Max Mac Mini, mm-hmm. which would allow you to upgrade those components independently. And I think that would be a really compelling option to have. I don't know, maybe one would be a little bit more expensive than the other. Maybe like a Mac Mini rig would be like $100, $200 more. Maybe. But just the fact that you could have that perfectly good display panel and replace the much less expensive Mac Mini that's connected to it instead of the whole thing, I think would be really, I would probably do that, to be honest.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, because Apple, obviously, you know, they updated the Mac Mini with the M1, and now the rumors are saying that it's going to get the M1 Pro and M1 Max, which, you know, obviously makes sense. But I think the rumor is some people are thinking that that might even happen in the March event, which we'll talk about in a bit. But regardless, I feel like if Apple's selling the Mac Mini and they're not selling the display, because obviously most people who go for the Mac Mini are not going to go for the Pro Display XDR, they're losing out on display sales, basically. So like, yeah. if they capture that market too, that, you know, they've already got the Mac Mini, you know, sell a consumer grade display and you can, you know, capture even more of the market otherwise.
Exactly. I think that's probably the most compelling argument towards thinking, hey, there might be a display at this event. And I might also add, if there is a display that goes with this new Mac Mini, I think it would be not a replacement for the Pro Display XDR, potentially. Because, I don't know, I feel like it would be really interesting if Apple could have three displays. And rumors, leaks have supported that possibility. Essentially that they would take the panel out of the 24-inch M1 iMac and then take whatever panel we get in this year's larger Apple Silicon iMac and then a Pro Display XDR replacement, right? So you could have like a $1,000 monitor, a $2,000 monitor, and a $3,000 monitor, whatever pricing structure they come up with. And then that would be perfect for pairing with an M1 Mac Mini or an M1 Pro Mac Mini or a Mac Pro.
Yeah.
And I think just having those options out there, you'd want to do that. Like, if you're launching the Mac Mini, and you're not launching that monitor alongside it, then all of those launch day sales where someone would add the monitor as well, you're missing out.
Yeah, exactly. Because like, you could make the argument like, oh, Apple's going to cut into the iMac sales if they do this, and Apple doesn't like to cut into their own sales. But they already have the Mac Mini, and they've had it for a long time, and they're still upgrading it. So you could argue that kind of cuts into it. I guess maybe, you know, they figure if you already have your own display, just buy the Mac Mini and go with it. But like, I don't see why they wouldn't just, you know, because they've had displays in the past and or they've worked with other companies like LG in the past. They sell displays, like Apple sells displays, whether they made it or not, they do sell displays. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense to go with the Mac Mini. And I definitely agree with you, you know, whatever, if we do see a display, it probably won't be a new Pro Display XDR, because exactly like you said, Pro Display XDR or whatever the replacement would be would pair nicely with a Mac Pro, but obviously a lot more expensive than what most people would want to pair with a Mac Mini. So that's where a consumer grade one would come in. So I think it makes sense.
I'm also wondering, like, theoretically, we're talking about people who would buy a Mac Mini and then, if the option was available, would buy a monitor to go with it. I also wonder how many people wouldn't buy a Mac Mini because there's no monitor to go with it. Because I think Apple's displays are somewhat unique. I mean, I'm sitting here in front of my iMac Pro, which is a 5K iMac, essentially, with fancier guts. But the 5K iMac is a pretty unique style of device. It's not something that you can recreate that easily, purely because I am not aware of displays that are 5K resolution, 27-inch size. It's not common, but it's really, really nice. I love the fact that I can be sitting in Final Cut Pro and have a viewer window that's high enough resolution to really get a feel for what my footage looks like. I love the fact that I can view 4K with room around it, or editing in Photoshop. Like, having this number of pixel, this pixel density, this resolution, it just makes a lot of sense. And there's not a ton of other, there's nothing out there that does that. I'm not even aware of a Pro Display XDR competitor, quote unquote, that has a 32-inch size, 6K resolution, that kind of pixel density. I just don't think those really exist.
That's true. And I wanted to let you respond because I know you have a good response. There were some comments saying like, oh, why not just buy some like cheaper and larger monitor? Like, why buy the Pro Display XDR at all? And I know you have a good response for that.
Oh, I don't remember what my good response is.
I know you said, you know, as far as like color coverage and like doing pro level work, you might need like a really pro monitor for that.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, I think the big thing for me is I've been on 27-inch IMAX for like 4 years now. And I know many people have been using 27-inch IMAX for a decade, even before they were Retina. But I want something a little bigger. And that's the problem with an iMac, is you're kind of tethered to the screen that's a physical part of it. So I've been toying with getting a Pro Display XDR, and I have actually ordered one, kind of. And I know, yeah, so it's a little weird, the situation, because I didn't want to pay, I'm not going to buy a new one at retail price. I'm not an idiot. You know, it's been out for more than 2 years. It's $5,000. I'm not going to pay retail for that. But weirdly enough, used Pro Display XDRs aren't really a whole lot cheaper. So I've actually found a way to get a new one for less than a used one, which I can't really go into too much detail on, but essentially, the issue was that I started trying to like get this thing in like November, and you know, there's been delays trying to figure stuff out, logistics and whatnot, and essentially the shipping dates are slipping big time. In fact, I kind of want to see, let me go ahead and share my screen here, and I want to see what Apple has the Pro Display shipping in. I think it's under Mac. Yes, here we go. So if we go to go to buy one of these things, standard glass, I'll take the Pro stand. Oh, that's right. Yeah, so it doesn't even show the delivery details until you like go to checkout, which is weird. I don't know if it's always done that. But now, at least, it is saying that the Pro Display, the stand, will get here in 6 to 8 days. But the display, a month, March 3 to March 10th. And I don't know, Noah, if you've been up to date, but does that date range sound familiar to you?
Yeah, I think, what was it, March 8th, right, is the rumored date for the Apple event.
It sure is. And that's really weird, right?
Yeah, I mean, it could be a supply chain issue and a coincidence, but it is kind of funny that falls like right in that range that they gave there. So I don't know.
And I don't know. I get that, you know, anything could be supply chain now. I'm pretty sure MacBooks are delayed as well. I think if you try to buy the 14-inch MacBook Pro, those are shipping. The base model 14-inch is saying February 22nd to March 1st. The other 14 is saying February 15th. The 16s are, wow. Oh my gosh, if you try to get the fully decked out 16-inch, the one, the pre-config one with the M1 Max, that's saying April.
Oh, wow.
Wow. But, yeah, so there are delays, absolutely. Very weird delays, because that one's in April, but the entry-level 16-inch delivers tomorrow.
You should order it.
So, yeah, that to me screams supply chain. The fact that you can get a base model now, they're in stock right now, and the higher spec one is shipping in April, that's supply chain, 100%. But that Pro Display XDR is a little bit interesting because it's been out for over 2 years and they've never had, you know, it's not a high volume thing. I don't know that I buy that people are, that enough people are buying Pro Display XDRs right now in 2022 to like push their deliveries that far back. I think it's legitimately possible that some display would come with the Mac Mini, which we've heard rumored for a March 8th event.
Yeah, that's a good point, because the product has been out for a while, and like you said, it's not a high volume product, so they probably have a pretty good idea of you know, what the sales are going to be. I don't see any reason why they would be abnormal around now. So it's a good point. I could see it.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I've got one theoretically on order, hopefully. I don't know. If it does get, I mean, the thing is, you know, if it ships in March and it gets here, like when that event happens, I'll just return it. You know, it's not a big deal. And even if it, you know, it's the type of thing where I get it in March and it gets replaced in November or December, then, well, I still have some content that I can make for it, and that'll probably make up for the difference, the hit that I would take in depreciation. Not to mention that if I get the Pro Stand, which I have done, regrettably, I would imagine that that will still work, so I'll just not have to buy that later this year.
That's why.
So I really don't think it's going to be that big a deal. Whoa, Ricky, can you send me an email instantaneously? Instantaneously, Ricky, email me elmiani98@gmail.com. That's publicly available information, by the way. I feel like now I'm going to get a bunch of fake Rickies in my emails, and I'm not going to be able to figure out how to do this, but. If Ricky is in fact telling the truth here, I'll do it. I'll buy it right now on the spot.
Wow.
So we'll see what happens. Okay. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
I wanted to talk. Let's go on to our next topic, shall we? I think we'll come back to March 8th a little bit later.
Okay.
But it's been on my mind. It's my flood situation, Noah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've had an unfortunate situation that has developed in my building, which was that someone was using the apartment gym, had their ablutions, and clogged the toilet rather significantly and failed to address that problem in any way, which caused an enormous leak in the pipe. I think they somehow broke a pipe. Like, I want to meet this person. I kind of want to know, like, how, like, what kind of a person is able to destroy the plumbing system of an entire building after going using the restroom.
True.
So that's interesting enough, right? But the unfortunate side effect of that broken pipe is that it leaked directly onto a PC that I had in my storage unit and soaked it thoroughly.
Mm. Yeah, it looked you saw the picture? Bad. I did.
Yeah, so it was sitting in a puddle. the drip was landing sort of right behind the power supply and splashing into the exhaust, onto the motherboard, inside of the power supply. Ugh. Wonderful. Isn't that great?
That is. Yeah, I was honestly wondering. I didn't realize that the PC was in your storage unit. I thought it was like in your apartment, and I was like, wow, that must have been really bad to for the leak or whatever to get all the way up into your apartment. It makes a lot more sense being in the storage unit. That I will say. But that's pretty rough.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I guess the fortunate thing is this wasn't a PC that I'm using all the time. This is my old gaming PC that rather than upgrade, I ended up building a new one because it was ITX and I wanted, it just was more practical to build an ATX, right? So I built a new PC like 2 years ago and this was the old one. Still good though. It's got a Ryzen 5 3600X. It's got, I think it's got 32 gigs of RAM. Well, I should really be using past tense because I'm not optimistic about its fortune after this recent event. Yeah, there was a lot of, if you go on my Twitter at Luke Miani, you can look at the picture. It's pretty horrific. Fortunately, there's a lot of very interesting takes on what this represents here in the comments section. We've got the poo PC. That's a good one. Someone suggested a video title, How to Clean Poopy PC. Nice, nice. Someone said that at their school, they destroyed a bathroom by flushing a block of clay down the toilet. That sounds about right. Someone said that they ate too much Taco Bell. All of these are believable. Fortunately, whatever pipe broke, I think, was the refill the toilet pipe, not the drain the toilet pipe, which is, of course, clogged. So it's not, I mean, I can't say for sure that it isn't effluent, but it doesn't reek. So I'm hopeful that it's not that bad.
That's good. That person who said the comment about the clay reminded me, I don't know if you remember, in middle school, remember when they called all like the middle school boys and they like yelled at us because someone like did something in the bathroom and I think they had to like remove the urinals or something because people were doing bad things in the bathroom. Do you remember that at all?
I thought somebody absolutely shattered one of the urinals or a sink or something.
Something, I don't remember, but they removed the urinals, or at the very least they like had an assembly and they yelled at all of us.
I do remember the yelling assembly, yeah. They were like, all boys, come here right now. Yeah. And they were like, you guys suck. And we were kind of like, well, yeah. You're not wrong.
Yeah. Oh, man.
13-year-old boys or something else.
Yeah.
Someone stole an entire stall door for a TikTok trend. See, honestly, right, like, we're talking about all of these things that happened to us in our middle school years, you know, 2010 to 2013, honestly, I feel like it's not even that bad compared to what the TikTok generation has probably inflicted upon schools and their employees.
That is true. Or at the very least, it's now more public. Not that we didn't have social media and whatever back then. Like, I'm not trying to sound like some old man, but not in the same way.
It was definitely different. Yeah. I mean, what were the viral things when we were in middle school? Trollolol guy.
Yeah.
Nyan Cat.
Angry
Gangnam
Birds.
Style.
Gangnam Style.
Angry Birds, yes. That's a good one. No, Flappy Bird was later.
That was high school. We were in high school. Yeah.
Do you remember the interior crocodile alligator? I drive a Chevrolet movie theater.
Yes.
That made the rounds for like a good couple weeks.
Yes, I do remember that.
Of course, Jake and Amir.
That was underrated, but that was a good
totally one. Underrated. That was more of like niche internet humor.
Yeah.
That still holds up.
Definitely.
Yeah. How did we start on that? Oh, yeah. We talked about my flood.
Yes, the flood.
That's how we got started on this. Right. So, yeah. I've got the computer. I used the cool air setting on my blow dryer to try to dry it. And then I'm going to just kind of leave it sitting for like 3 days or something.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much all you can do. But I'm assuming you have renter's insurance, right?
I do have renter's insurance.
Do you think they might, maybe I wonder, they would cover it? I would look into that at least.
You know, I was going to say like, oh, I don't know. I was going to be like, eh, maybe I'll just let it go. But I guess, you know, why do I care? It's an insurance company. I don't care about them.
Yeah, honestly.
Even if it's a PC I wasn't using all that much, I pay for that stupid coverage. And they're like, this guy's a sucker. We're never going to have to pay anything because it's an apartment and nothing ever happens to those. Well, guess what? Flood, baby. Yep, pay up.
Happened.
Give me that cash. Who knows? Maybe I'll rebuild it. I'll make like an insurance PC.
Honestly, I think it's worth it. Especially, no, you know what you do is you quote them the prices that those like today's prices that are like super high.
So here's
not that they would
my
do that,
moral
obviously.
Conundrum. Here's my moral conundrum though. I think you'd have to probably do fair market value, but it's a custom PC, so that gives me some leeway.
Yeah,
I think I could probably say $1,400, which is a slight exaggeration, and that's believable. You know, yeah. Chip shortage, you know, that's fine. The thing is, I had already sold the graphics card from it, and that would have been the big cash money.
Yeah.
So the question is, all law enforcement has to look away right now, and you're not allowed to tell anyone I said this, but like, what if there was a graphics card in it? You know what I mean? Like, what would happen?
There was a graphics card, but the force of the water, like...
Ejected it.
It ejected it, and then it like, flew down... went downstream.
Dissolved.
It's gone.
It dissolved.
That works, too.
Insurance adjusters are not tech-savvy people. I'm just saying. I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
Yes.
For those, tell them there was an RTX 3090. I do have an RTX 3090. So that wouldn't be a complete lie. Okay, I'm just kidding. I'm not actually going to do that. Like, that's fraud.
Yeah.
But I might honestly try to get insurance to pay for it because, I mean, I pay them $10 a month for perpetuity. They might as well do something when somebody takes a giant dump in our toilet and floods poopy water on my PC.
You should definitely try and get your money for it. That's what insurance is for.
Exactly. Just put a piece of crap graphics card in it for photos, says Cole, by the way, longtime sugar daddy of the podcast, Cole Weathers here. I think that's an accurate statement at this point.
Yeah.
I honestly would, but there is no such thing as a POS graphics card anymore. Even like an RX 570 is like a $400 card. It's ridiculous at this point. Tell them it was a 2019 Mac Pro. Interesting. I actually do have a Mac Pro in there. It was just behind other things, so I don't know. Like, the way that I had situated my this locker was actually kind of fortunate. I didn't intentionally arrange it in this way, but it ended up being quite helpful when there's sitting water in the unit. And that was, I basically put the empty iMac boxes on the ground and then put tech stuff on top of that. So fortunately, all the other stuff that was in that is fine. It's just this PC. But then I think there was also a Mac Pro at the back that I didn't look at, but might be fine. But it's, you know, it's like a 2009, like $100 Mac Pro. Most of the components are taken out of it anyway, so I didn't even bother checking because I didn't really care to be honest.
Fair enough.
So what was, I forgot what we talked about earlier, the topic that you wanted to get into.
Oh, I think that was more like the March 8th event rumor and maybe the kind of stuff that we would see there.
Yes. Would you like to fill us all in on what that rumor entails?
Sure. Yeah, I've looked into it a little bit. So it's seeming like the rumor is that the first Apple event of the year will be on March 8th. And I feel like that's fairly in line. There's usually an Apple March event. I feel like it's usually later in the month, but maybe I'm wrong. I know you have a better memory for that stuff than I do.
Yeah, I think March 8th was... I think that's a pretty believable date.
Yeah.
But, and you know, honestly, that's pretty soon, which I'm also quite happy about.
Yeah, there hasn't been much going on for a while, so that will be nice to have.
And last year was admittedly a little bit light. It was a little bit light on the updates. I mean, I think it wasn't any worse than usual, and we certainly got some exciting stuff. But mostly, if we're honest, it was the end of the year, right? We had, up until September, there was slim pickings, admittedly. We had the iPad Pro, which was not anybody's favorite update. I covered it a little bit, and I can tell you, nobody cared about those iPads. Yeah. Like, I've made videos on iPads that have been viewed many times. Nobody cared about the M1 Pro, the M1 iPad. It's just not that interesting because it was like, okay, so it's a faster thing and a thing that didn't need to be faster. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had the M1 iMac, which I think had good, people were interested in the iMac, but the fact that it was M1, which we already saw, meant that it didn't have a ton of new substance to dive into. It was interesting to look at because when I did the initial round of M1 reviews in November 2020, those videos got eyeballs because everyone wanted to know how they were stacking up. iMac, you were watching it to find out about the package. You weren't trying to find out about the performance. I mean, true. We talked about it a little bit, but just to see like, oh, the one fan version, the 7-core GPU, and like it was like these very minor differences that we were talking about. So the real heavy hitter was when the MacBook Pros came out. But even that, I have to say, I talked to a couple of other YouTubers and we all kind of noticed this. When the event happened, interest was sky high. I made several videos before the MacBooks actually shipped that pulled better views than my videos that I made with the MacBooks themselves. Because the hype was off the charts. The initial round of reviews, the first week, those videos did really well. But then after a week, the MacBook Pro content was gone. It was so saturated with so many people talking about it that, you know, I would upload a video and if I even breathed a touch of MacBook Pro on it, the views just tanked. Hmm. So that was pretty interesting, anecdotally. But now we're talking about, I think, another situation with the M1 iMac, right? If we do get new Macs in March, I think it's safe to say that they're not going to be new processors.
Right. I think the main rumors are, I think, like a new iPhone SE, a new iPad Air, And I think maybe Mac Mini, and obviously, you know, those would get M1 Max and M1 Pro. So I think that was, those were the main rumors.
Yes. And I think, honestly, I think that iPad Air refresh, I buy most Apple products. I think I'd probably skip that one because, I mean, realistically, they're probably going to put like an A15 in it instead of an A14 and then add center stage, which has made it around all the other iPads. And I'm not sure that there's any other rumors that we've heard for that one. Am I wrong?
I think they're just bringing it in line with the other iPad updates. So yeah.
Yeah, like, so that's pretty light. And then iPhone SE, that I think is going to be interesting. I don't know if you've been too plugged into these rumors, but well, one, it's 5G. That's a pretty nice upgrade. Almost certainly will be an A15 chip, which, you know, at sub $500 price tag, regardless of anything else, you're already at a good place. Sub 500 for an A15 and 5G, that's a great deal, regardless of what it looks like.
Yeah.
The question is, what will it look like? Are they going to finally ditch the iPhone 8 body from 2017, which was in itself an updated version of the iPhone 6 body from 2014? Are we going to finally leave this 8-year-old design? I don't know.
Yeah, the last rumor that I saw, which was maybe a little while ago, was that they were sticking with it this year, and then next year they were going to go to like the iPhone 10 style, like notch style body. So that was the last thing I saw, but that was a little while ago.
I loved the iPhone SE that we got in 2020. It was fantastic. But yeah, I mean, Mac rumors I've just pulled up here, they're not expecting any design changes for the next version. So the big issue for me is, I mean, there's the cosmetic things of like, wow, that's a really old design. It's a single camera. The home button, the bezels, the lack of touch, the lack of Face ID. That's getting a little very long in the tooth at this point. Yeah. As I said, 8-year-old design. That's like a bit much. But the biggest thing, the single biggest thing, is the battery. It's just not good enough. It just is not. Like, if you look at any other iPhone, they've been getting thicker, they've been getting chunkier batteries, and Apple has, in my opinion, correctly chosen to prioritize getting good battery life out of a phone versus trying to make it thinner, right? Battery life, meaningful. Thinness, not really that meaningful. But the iPhone SE, because it's an 8-year-old design, was when Apple was still trying to say like, oh, it's 17% thinner than the previous generation, when nobody actually cared. So you're going to be losing out on battery life significantly.
That's true, because like that design, the iPhone 6, that was like right when they were like at the peak of their thinness over everything else kind of thing. And it's
Bend
also
gate,
interesting.
Anyone?
Well, yeah, definitely. And also, the 5G will have a non-negligible impact on the battery as well.
That's a very good point, because the battery, I mean, that's the craziest thing. The battery itself is identical to what shipped 5 years ago on the iPhone 8 with an A11 chip, without 5G. So yeah, the A15 is maybe more efficient than the A13, so maybe that would counteract the battery life hit from 5G, but with the same exact battery, there is a 0% chance that they will improve battery life. In fact, I think that it would be worse. And even if they did improve it a little bit, it has a long way to go. I have an iPhone SE. I daily drove it for a little while. The battery life is its biggest flaw. It is on the very, very, very close edge of unusable, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I guess, like, You know, the SE was good for Apple because this they've had the design for so long. So, like, all of the, you know, manufacturing and supply chain, like, all of that stuff had been set up, and they, you know, they could just keep it going, change out the internals a little bit. But, you know, as far as the case and everything, you know, just keep it going. But I guess now we're at the point where the SE is the only phone in that style that they've had for, like, a while. Which I guess, mm-hmm. you know, it's been a couple of years, so I guess you could have said the same thing, you know, when they released the SE 2. I don't know. But now it's kind of getting to the point where, like, that's the, you know, it's I don't know how economical it still is if all of the other phones have, you know, the notch and the flat mm-hmm. sides at this point, and this is, like, the one phone that's sort of left in the dust. And then, you know, so I don't know, you know, maybe Apple will keep the design for one more year, but it's definitely, you know, it's definitely getting old.
I would really like to see them move over to the iPhone XR or the iPhone 11 design. I think that would be really, really compelling. And I think, honestly, the only risk with that would be eating into sales of the other previous gen iPhones. I think if they were to go to essentially the iPhone 11 body with an A15 and I guess it would probably have 5G as well, which the iPhone 11 doesn't, that would make it a little bit more expensive. Right now, they're still selling the iPhone 11 for $499 with 64 gigabytes. So I feel like it would definitely be a tall order for to essentially say, hey, I want the A15 and also 5G and also take $100 off that price. But at the same time, like, I don't know, $450 or honestly even $499 for an iPhone 11 body with A15 and 5G. That seems like a pretty darn good deal, and I think people would definitely buy that.
Yeah, you know, I think it's kind of interesting too, because, you know, the SE kept the old design, you know, because it, you know, Apple had that design and they had the manufacturing and the supply chains and all that. And so, like you said, you know, if you look now, the iPhone 11 is still being sold in the fall mm-hmm. when the iPhone 14 comes out. You know, theoretically, let's say the iPhone 11 disappears, and then when the next iPhone SE comes, mm-hmm. theoretically, let's say that they, you know, they moved it over to that supply chain, and maybe that's why they're expecting next year, not this year. I don't know.
That's an interesting thought, because the 2020 iPhone SE also linked up with discontinuing the iPhone 8, which they had been selling at that point. But I will say, if we're going to look at, you know, historical precedent, right? In 2016, the iPhone SE came out using the iPhone 5S body.
Mm-hmm.
3 years old. In 2020, the iPhone SE came out using the iPhone 8 body, 3 years old.
Mm.
In 2022, the iPhone 11 body is 3 years old, 2019. So the precedent is there to say, hey, maybe they will continue to use this 3-year old, and maybe they would just stop selling the iPhone 11 in March.
Right. Yeah, I could see if they switch over to iPhone 11 style body, I would definitely see them, you know, stop selling the iPhone 11, but that would be an interesting, that would be one way they could do it. You know, they could wait another year for the design, or they could jump on it this year. That's interesting.
I think it's definitely something to keep an eye on. Also, on the subject of the iPad, Cole pointed out here, I think it's weird nothing else ever got the touch sensor like the iPad Air. Perhaps he's proposing an iPhone 11 without Face ID with like a Touch ID in the side button. But also there was another implementation of the touch sensor, and that was the iPad mini.
Right.
I think a lot of people have honestly forgotten about the iPad mini, including myself. It's in a drawer turned off. I want to love it, but it's hard to.
Yeah, I don't blame people for forgetting about it, to be honest. That is an interesting idea about putting the Touch ID in the side. And I feel like Touch ID is one of the big differentiators between the SE and the regular or pro iPhones or whatever you want to call them, because they all have Face ID and they have for a while, and only the SE, as far as iPhones go, have Touch ID. So that's an important distinction.
Exactly.
I think it would be interesting if they use the iPhone 11 body without the Touch ID, without the Face ID sensor. What would the notch look like? I don't know if they would go out of their way to make a tiny notch and like redesign.
Oh, certainly not.
So it would just be like a mostly
empty notch. I think they would leave the notch and it would be empty.
Yeah, that could be a little... I guess it wouldn't look any different, really. But yeah, I do think that Touch ID is one of the big differentiators.
I do wonder if it has to be anymore. Just because, like... I don't know. I feel like Face ID has matured enough at this point that it's probably not a huge expense for Apple to manufacture. There's been modifications to it. Like, I think in the iPhone 12, they made it more compact. They've made it more compact this year. Like, there have been improvements to it. But I think in certainly an iPhone 11 form, if they can sell that phone for $499, I think Face ID has matured to the point where they can probably start to decrease the price on that, because as you might imagine with Apple, I personally think that we pay a price premium for new technology when it first comes out, but I think Apple ends up eating some of that cost early on, because then they keep charging you for it once they've figured out how to make it cheaper. Like, if you look at the new MacBook Pros, the fact that they, like, if you look at the 14 inch, right, at $1,999, they upped the price for the base configuration from $1,799 to $1,999. But for that, you're getting this new display, which is undeniably dramatically more expensive to make. Nobody is going to argue with that, because it is not a display that you will find out there. Mini LED and high refresh rate, variable refresh rate with a notch, like, that is a very expensive piece to make.
True.
And they didn't, at the end of the day, increase prices all that much. Yes, you could argue they're probably saving a lot of money by using their own silicon, even if it's more powerful. It's a lot less expensive to make. I think someone ballparked an iPhone chip like an A14 or an A15 as costing about $25 to manufacture. So, yeah, I'm sure they're saving plenty of money by not using Intel, but those are expensive displays. Right now, they're probably eating the cost. 3 years from now, when we're still paying that price and they've gotten that manufacturing, that tooling worked out, at that point, you're probably giving them some pretty healthy margins.
That's definitely a good point. And I do agree that Touch ID, I'm sure it's a lot, or Face ID, I'm sure it's a lot cheaper now than it was in the iPhone X. I guess the one thing that I'll say is, as far as, when I said that Touch ID was the differentiating factor between the SE, I didn't necessarily mean that it had to be, but more like Apple, purposely makes it that
way.
Wants
it to be.
Right, exactly. To push people, if you want the Face ID, you got to go to the bigger one. But you'll get something good on, you'll get something usable, something good on the base one. But that's one of the things that they want to be a difference.
That's a good point. Because if you notice the way that Apple rolls out their products, it's very uncommon, especially with the iPhone, for you to get new stuff on the cheaper one. Like the iPhone rolls out in a tiered way where things start on the most expensive one and then they trickle down.
Mm-hmm.
Like Face ID started on the iPhone 10 and then it trickled down to the 10R and the 11 and then the 12 and then the 11 keeps going and they get cheaper. Everything trickles down, but you never see Apple come out with a new cheap phone that does something better than their expensive phone, at least at that time. They're very careful about that with the iMac, with the iPhone. Not as much with the Mac, because, you know, Apple Silicon, they started on the low end. But that kind of made sense because, you know, they have to build the chips up and that's the way that you do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, there have been people that are like, oh, the iPhone SE is going to use Touch ID, and so they're going to get rid of the notch. Nope. Without even looking at who leaked it or any details, I can tell you right away, if there's a new design to be had, it is not on the iPhone SE. iPhone SE is a parts bin special. It is recycling the tooling and the exact same parts that you already have, updating them just enough to make it, you know, a good value and putting that on sale.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. I think you can see something similar in the iPad. You know, you look at the 2018 iPad Pro refresh and then eventually, you know, that new design and some of the new features made their way to the iPad Air. And I guess you could say the iPad and especially, you know, the iPad Mini as well. But, you know, again, the iPad Pro got it first, and it still has the most features out of all of the iPads. And the iPhones are the same way. And I definitely agree. Like, there's even if they don't need the notch, there's no way that they're going to sell their cheapest phone with no notch all screen. And then their more expensive phones are going to have some sort of a notch or even a hole puncher, like whatever it's going to be. There's no way that the cheapest phone is starting there. That's not how this phone works, like you said.
Yeah, they will sell that thing with an empty notch. Like, they will sell that thing with a little piece of bezel there that has nothing behind it but empty space if it means putting it in the SE. Like, yeah, there's no way that... I think there was actually a rumor. Let me look at this. iPhone SE hole punch. I swear I saw a rumor of an iPhone SE with a hole punch camera. Analyst. iPhone SE adding 5G in 2022. Hole punch design coming in 2023. Wait, this is from Ross Young? He's very accurate.
Okay, but here's the thing. 5G coming this year. Okay, we've had it in the iPhones for, you know, what, two iPhones, two generations so far. The hole punch next year would be soon, but if the Pro models get a hole punch later this year, they would still beat the SE to the punch.
Oh, whoa. Yeah. I mean, that's a very true point. My next comment on that would be if Ross Young is saying, he said, hearing about a 6.1 inch version in 2023 with hole punch rather than a notch. If Ross Young is saying that that's a thing, that's very credible. But I would definitely add caveats to that. Like, you know, maybe the timeline. Maybe that's more of a 2024 thing. The other thing would be that if a hole punch design is coming on an iPhone in 2023 on an SE, then it's coming on other more expensive, better things sooner than that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they would not start with the SE to debut hole punch. That's just, it does not make any sense.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I should also point out that this is, that's a year old article, April 1st, 2021. And the nature of leaks can be fluid. It's possible to leak stuff with very, very credible information that is legitimate that ends up being wrong, not because the leak was wrong, but because Apple changed their minds. Mm-hmm. You may recall last year I had a leak saying that the new MacBook Pro would not have 64 gigabyte of RAM option. I had it saying that it would have a UHS 2 SD card, and I had it saying a backlit Touch ID sensor. Well, the UHS 2 was correct. The no 64 gigabyte option was like a partial thing, because the information didn't, we didn't know that there was a distinction between M1 Pro and M1 Max. Mm-hmm. So that was like a, oh, in retrospect, that was an M1 Pro leak, not knowing about the M1 Max as a separate thing. So that's like a half and half. But the backlit Touch ID sensor, that was wrong. But I stand by the information that I talked about, because it was unbelievably airtight. So that was a case of just like Apple changed their mind. That was months in advance, and they just decided not to do that. So it's always possible when you see leaks and you think, oh, these people are wrong, they're dumb. No, not necessarily. I mean, there are fake leakers, no doubt, but there are also real leakers who leak stuff that ends up being not accurate, like the Apple Watch Series 7 redesign that never ended up happening because Apple runs into stuff and they have to change their mind really quickly. And I mean, that whole situation was its own can of worms, where the consensus is essentially, I don't know if you saw this, Noah, that the Apple Watch Series 7 was going to get redesigned. They had manufacturing trouble, and they basically ditched it like last minute.
I did hear something about that, but hopefully we'll get that this year.
Dude, I'm hoping. I've still got my Series 5. I know you do too. I mean, I'm not the biggest Apple Watch user, but if we do get that redesign, I'll probably upgrade.
Yeah, I definitely would if we get that redesign.
Especially if the battery life is better. Have you noticed your battery life starting to slip a little bit?
I don't know. I mean, I wear mine 22/7, let's say, because...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, well, I wear it to bed and whatever. You know, I obviously charge it in the mm-hmm. morning, charge it at night, but it's usually fine. But there are some times where I'll... if it doesn't get as much time to charge in the morning, then it'll kind of die by the night. So, you know, extra battery would always be nice to have.
Yeah, I mean, I've generally been more of like, I charge it at night. So I wake up and it's full. I do my thing. And then I've started to notice lately that by the end of the day, it's getting lower and lower. I haven't had it like not make it through a day, but it has, I've noticed a difference. You know what else I've noticed, Noah?
What else have you noticed?
I've noticed that our podcast is starting to wrap up a little bit, wouldn't you say?
I think so. I think this is a good time, as good a time as any.
So I think I've got one thing to send us off for this episode, and that is from Sugar Daddy Cole Weathers in the comments, who said Luke's gym is a pretty successful leaker. And I think that's undeniable.
That's a good one. I like that.
Yeah. And so on that note, oh man, I'm going to go file an insurance claim, I guess.
Yeah. Get that money.
Thank you so much for joining us. I have been your host, Luke Miani.
And I've been your host, Noah Rubin. We will see you next week, and have a great night.